rectal cancer is increasing among adults under the age of 55. This is despite an overall decrease in the disease, according to a new American Cancer Society study. We're going to discuss this study and talk with our guest expert about the latest in prevention and treatments. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, March 16th. March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month, so let's raise awareness. Did you know that despite an overall decrease in the disease, that colorectal cancer is up in younger people, people under the age of 50? Have you or has a loved one ever had colorectal cancer? Do you have any questions about screenings or other prevention efforts or treatments? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Noelle Locante. She is a medical oncologist at the UW Carbone Cancer Center. She's also an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming
You're
in.
Welcome.
All right. So, according to this study, people born in 1990 have double the risk of colon cancer and quadruple the risk of rectal cancer compared to people who were born in 1950. Wow, what is that? What's going on here?
Well, it's true that their risk is double, but their risk, I think it's important to point out, the absolute risk is low, right? It's an uncommon event that remains uncommon. But the trends are showing that younger people are getting diagnosed with colon and particularly rectal cancer. We don't know exactly why it is, but we think that it has to do with environmental exposures rather than some genetic risk that dramatically changed in this cohort. If you look at rates of obesity, for example, which is a known risk factor for colorectal cancer, that maps right on to these same birth cohorts. The rates of obesity pretty much equal the rates of colorectal cancer, for example.
So why is there, do we know why there is a link between obesity and colorectal cancer?
I don't think we really know. I mean, I've seen discussions around the microbiome, meaning our bacterial makeup in our body, that somehow it's different and that predisposes you to obesity and also to colon cancer. We know that exercise prevents colon cancer, and I guess you could rationally think that a person who is heavily overweight would have a hard time exercising. But we really don't know.
Yeah. So typically, I would think that people who are in their, you know, their 20s, 30s, 40s are not getting screened for colon cancer.
Yeah, and they maybe shouldn't. I mean, I think there's an argument that you could screen starting at 40 or 45. For example, those numbers, the number of people affected by colorectal cancer in that age group equals the amount of people that have cervical cancer, and that is a cancer we screen for in that age group. So I think 40 to 50 possibly. Before 40, I'm sorry, it really doesn't make sense from a numbers perspective. But what I hope this paper does is it raises the awareness on the part of primary care doctors, who are really the doctors that are interfacing with these young people, to really think about colon and rectal cancer when a patient presents with bleeding. Most of the time, these patients get diagnosed very late. They've had bleeding for a really long time. They're told over and over they have hemorrhoids, hemorrhoids, hemorrhoids. And then by the time they finally get a scope, you know, the disease is fairly advanced.
Yeah. So, talk some of that. What are the symptoms of colon or rectal cancer?
So, usually patients will have some bleeding, red blood in their stools. They can have abdominal pain. They can perceive it as constipation, hard to pass their bowel movements. They may notice weight loss.
Yeah. And so when the younger adults are talking to their doctors, the doctors are not thinking at that point, this is colon or rectal cancer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, in a 20-year-old, you normally, that wouldn't even be on the radar. But I think it needs to be with this rising trend.
Yeah. But overall, this disease, colon and rectal cancers, are on the decrease.
Right.
Why do we think that is?
Colonoscopy and colon cancer screening. Screening works for this cancer. We diagnose it earlier, or we diagnose it before it's even cancer, when it's just a polyp and we can remove that polyp.
So the actual removal of a polyp is the prevention of a probable cancer that would develop?
Yeah, so certain types of polyps will, over time, usually about 10 years, turn into cancer. And if we can remove it in that precancerous state, that's much easier for everyone involved than letting it develop into a full cancer. Yeah.
Well, I can speak from personal experience that the demand for screenings, colonoscopies, must be way up there because I am essentially on a waiting list. I mean, it was I'm due for one this year. Just that's my schedule, and I'm due for one, and it'll be. I was told it'll be several months before it's scheduled.
Yeah. So for a patient at average risk who's not having symptoms, no family history, there can be a long wait for colonoscopy. But there are other modalities that are approved that are options, including like stool cards that you would take home, or virtual colonoscopy is available here in Dane County, which is a CAT scan looking for colon cancer. So there are some other options that you can get into quicker. But you're right, we have a shortage of folks who can do the colonoscopy, and that's a workforce issue. And we're trying to make that better, but it's a slow process.
Oh, I didn't realize. I thought it might be that we were getting the word out and more people were, but I suppose it's both.
It's both, yeah. More people and fewer doctors that can do it.
Yeah. Well, tell me more about these other alternatives. Are they as effective as a colonoscopy?
Well, the benefit of colonoscopy is you can see the polyp, remove the polyp. These other modalities only can diagnose either large polyps, with the exception of the virtual colonoscopy, can only diagnose larger polyps or invasive cancers. So they're not ideal, but they're better than nothing. And the best colon cancer screening is the one that gets done, right? Makes more sense to do it than wait 2 years to get your colonoscopy. Stool cards have to be done every year. Virtual colonoscopy is a CAT scan, but then we also have the ability to then scope you if they find a polyp so that we can remove it. There's logistics and pros and cons to all of them, and it would be a fairly involved conversation with the primary care doctor to decide on one. But I think people think there's only one test they can get, and that's just not true for colon cancer screening.
We are talking with Dr. Noelle LeConte. She is a medical oncologist at UW Carbone Cancer Center. We are talking about colon cancer or rectal cancers, as it is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And we are talking about this study or this report from the American Cancer Society that finds that there are more cases of colon and rectal cancers being diagnosed in younger adults than in the past. That is on the rise, while the overall disease itself is on the decline. We welcome your questions for her. We welcome maybe your own experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I wanted to get into a little bit more the prevalence of this disease. You were saying that the young adults being diagnosed with this disease that's still small.
Yeah, I mean, we went from essentially a 1 in a million to a 3 in a million kind of risk. Those are not exact numbers, but it gets the point across that it's still a pretty rare event. Though the trend is definitely that it's increasing, and that's something we need to be aware of. But young people in general are quite healthy. We think that access to care is part of the issue, too, for these patients getting diagnosed fairly late. Young people tend to be uninsured or underinsured, and they seek care late in their symptoms. But I think, I don't want millennials and Gen Xers to be out there thinking, oh my gosh, my risk is really, really high. It's not. But if they're having bleeding, I really want them to get care, be evaluated.
Is there anything the millennials or Gen Xers can do right now, and for that matter, aging baby boomers like me, to before the bleeding starts? I mean, is there anything we know that we can do to prevent colon or rectal cancer?
You bet. There's a lot you can do. One is an aspirin a day. So new guidelines have come out recommending starting at age 40 that everyone start an aspirin a day. Baby aspirin is fine. That's 81 milligrams. One is exercise. Very clearly reduces the rates of polyps and colon cancer and rectal cancer. One is getting the recommended screenings. So by getting screened, you reduce your rate because we hopefully take out some polyps or identify polyps that can be removed. Avoiding alcohol, particularly in men. So binge alcohol, heavy alcohol use, moderate alcohol use is fine, but higher rates are associated with colon and rectal cancer.
What about diet?
Yeah. Diet, so red meat, pretty clearly related to colon and rectal cancer. Low fiber diets, there's an association. It's not entirely clear, but a higher fiber diet is likely healthy. And then the American Cancer Society recommended 5 or more fruits or veggies a day would be possible to reduce your rates of colon cancer. Now, these diet studies that have been done, they've never clearly been able to show with 100% certainty that we're reducing rates. And that's because patients don't always follow the diet. It's probably a pretty small effect, and so you need a large number.
We will check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will be back and we will answer your questions about colorectal cancer. We are talking about colorectal cancer and a new study that says that more young people are contracting colorectal cancers. And we are talking about why that might be and what we can do about it. And welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We're not just focusing on younger people. We're focusing on everybody, wondering if you have a question about colorectal cancer. Our guest is Dr. Noelle LeConte, a medical oncologist at UW's Carbone Cancer Center. She is an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We talked a little bit about prevention. Do we know what causes colon cancer? Is there a genetic connection to colon cancer?
Yeah, for sure. There's a certain chunk of patients with colon and rectal cancer who carry a familial syndrome like Lynch syndrome or FAP. There are a number of them. But the bulk of patients have no family history. And so I wouldn't want anyone out there to think, oh, you know, mom and dad didn't have colon cancer, I'll never get it. Everyone over probably 45 at this point should perceive themselves as being at risk for colon cancer. It's one of our most common cancers.
Yeah. So someone who doesn't have a family history, has a colonoscopy and finds out that there are some polyps, they are removed, and that then removes the risk of cancer, at least from those polyps?
Yep. Colonoscopy, although it's our gold standard test, is not perfect. It's not 100%. In addition, people who grow one polyp tend to grow more polyps. And so that's why people need to keep getting screened every few years. And that usually when you finish your colonoscopy, you're given a recommendation to come back anywhere between 1 and 10 years to get a repeat scope.
Yeah. And if you have polyps frequently, that just means that you have been eating red meat all your life and not exercising and or you have a family link, or are there some people that will get polyps even if all is well?
Yeah, there are people who will get polyps despite completely clean living lives. Often patients will say, why did I get this? Why did this happen? And many times we don't know. It just is. It yeah. just is how your body is made, whatever you were exposed to over the course of your life. But now we know about that risk and we need to do what we can to lower or mitigate that risk.
Yeah. All right. So let's say the doctor doesn't get the polyp in time.
Yeah.
Then what?
So colon cancer follows, a very logical sequence where it becomes a polyp and that polyp gets bigger and bigger and eventually becomes what's called an invasive cancer. And then it goes from stage 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. And 4 means it's spread beyond the colon or rectum and the lymph nodes into the liver. And at that point, rarely it is still curable. But most of the time those patients will succumb to that cancer.
Yeah. What are the treatments though, if it has progressed beyond the colon?
Okay. So if they're diagnosed with a colon tumor, the usual first step is surgery, a bunch of fancy x-rays to make sure the cancer hasn't spread, a complete lab panel. For patients who have cancer in the lymph node, which is stage 3, then we often recommend a course of chemotherapy following that surgery for about 6 months. And then we follow people in surveillance for a total of 5 years because, as I said, sometimes, even with metastatic disease in the liver or the lung, we can still cure those patients.
Yeah. But you say that that's once it's spread to stage 3, it's hard to
stage 4.
Stage 4.
3 is still curable.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Right.
And stage 4 in a small amount of time is still curable. It's one of the only solid tumors that we can still cure, but it just has to do with where the cancer is. It has to be, you know, in a relatively limited amount of a single organ that we can still surgically remove it and so forth.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call from John in Boaz. Hi, John.
Good morning. I would like to focus on prevention. I just had a colonoscopy done, and I was clean as a whistle. The doctor recommended the Mayo Clinic's healthy lifestyle, nutrition, and healthy eating, which is more like Joy's vegetarian Mediterranean diet, which is fruits and vegetables, whole grain, legumes and nuts, and olive oil is the fat. Well, I'm thinking that this newer generation is focusing on processed foods.
Yeah, so that's John's theory. Could he have a point?
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly one of the things that's being considered. We know that the way food is digested, or it's called fermentation, changes through the whole colon and rectum, and that what you eat has different effects on what part of the large intestine, you know, it gets exposed to. So it does make sense that what you eat is really important in colon cancer.
Yeah. Would you go along with John's doctor's recommendation? It sounded like a Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, I mean, I like that diet for my patients. We tend to map onto the American Cancer Society diet, which is, as he said, plant-based, heavy fruits and vegetables, low red meats, low alcohol, high fiber. If he's completely free of polyps, he probably doesn't need to worry all that much, to be perfectly honest with you. People who don't have a polyp on their first colonoscopy are much lower risk, but mm-hmm. It's a good healthy diet for your heart and other things too.
And doctors that do colonoscopies must say clean as a whistle more than once, because
right.
My husband got the clean as a whistle diagnosis
yeah.
too. So what about that prep? That's just awful.
That prep is awful.
It changed a little bit. The first, there was like just big gallon jugs of it, and
yeah.
Now it's not as much, but it's, talk some about what the point of that is and
yeah.
whether there's any improvements on the horizon.
Well, the point is to clean out the colon, right? If there's stool, imagine your colon like a garden hose. And if there's stool all along the inside of that garden hose, we can't see what we need to see, which is the walls of the colon. So we force patients to drink this stuff that basically evacuates their bowel in a fairly short order, and it's totally unpleasant, and it's the worst part of the test. Most people would say the actual colonoscopy was pretty easy. So we're going towards lower volume. We used to have patients drink lots and lots and lots of this stuff, and now we can get away with less. There are certain patients where we can have them follow a specific diet and then do a lower volume of the prep, but it just has to happen. We just need to have that cleaned out. So,
I don't know if I can ever drink. What was it that I put in that solution? Crystal Light lemonade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And
right.
I do not want it ever again.
Right.
We are talking about prevention and treatment and awareness of colorectal cancer. It is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. We are talking with our guest expert about news when it comes to the prevention and treatment of colorectal cancers, and we're welcoming your questions, your own experiences, maybe your reactions to this study that shows that more young people are getting a diagnosis of colorectal cancer, even though the overall disease is decreasing. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Dr. Noelle LeConte is our guest. She is a medical oncologist at the UW Carbone Cancer Center. Monette emails, what about ColorGuard for a colon cancer screening? Mm-hmm. It is covered by Medicare. Mm-hmm. And then Monette also wonders, how often are there complications from colonoscopies?
Mm-hmm. So she's asking about ColorGuard, which is a new screening test that just got approval within the last few years. It looks not only for blood, but also for particular DNA or gene matter from a tumor in the stool. Okay. It's not covered by every insurance at this point. It is a very good option for people. So like I said, the best colon cancer screening test is the one that gets done. Whether you decide it's ColorGuard or FIT testing or colonoscopy, whatever you and your doctor decide.
And I'm sorry, the ColoGuard, what exactly happens with that?
You have a bowel movement in a box.
Oh.
You send the box to Exact Sciences, which is based here in Madison, and they run the test for this fecal DNA and also for blood, and then you get the result. So it's a test you can do at home, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, way back when, I remember even before I was 50, a doctor used to recommend, I don't remember how old I was, but it was a little, you know, to see if you had blood in your stool. That seemed to be a common test, and maybe even earlier.
Yep. And we still do that now. That's what those FIT tests or GWIAC tests are. We're looking for blood in the stool, and then if you have blood, then we send you for a colonoscopy. If you're going to do those kind of tests, you need to do them more frequently than you would need to do a colonoscopy, but it's a very good way for screening for colon cancer. It wouldn't tell us if you had polyps, unless you had a really big polyp that was bleeding.
So what about complications from colonoscopies?
Very rare. I mean, the main risk is that you could have a perforation when they're taking out a polyp. But overall, it's a very safe test. It does come along with some sedatives, right? Because most people don't want to be awake for the procedure because it's a little uncomfortable. And there's a risk with the sedatives, too. But for the vast majority of patients, unless you're very old, very frail, have a lot of medical conditions, very safe test. Done as an outpatient.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Patrick on Facebook wants to know if there is any connection of colorectal cancers to increased HPV infections.
Okay, yep. HPV is a virus, and it's a virus that causes anal cancer. So just a little anatomy. So the large intestine is made up of the colon and the rectum, and then the very end is called the anus. The anus is made up of skin cells, which are called squamous cells. And when those cells are exposed to a certain type of human papillomavirus, it can develop or grow into a cancer. That's different than the colon and rectal cancer that we're talking about today, which is called an adenocarcinoma or a glandular tissue cancer. He's absolutely right that HPV is more commonly diagnosed. That's partially because we didn't really know about it as a risk factor for a long time, and now we're looking. It is related to head and neck cancer and cervical cancer in women, and then anal cancer, and there is a vaccine for it now.
All right, and so talk also the difference between a colon cancer and rectal cancer.
Okay, so the colon is the first part of the large intestine. The large intestine, the job we say at work, it's the trash compactor of the bowel. It's there to absorb water and make a very loose bowel movement into a solid bowel movement. The rectum is the last 25% of the large intestine. There are different levels of immune cells throughout the colon and rectum, different jobs of the colon and the rectum, which may explain why we're seeing more rectal cancers in young people than we are colon cancers, for example.
And you also, I mean, there's other cancers, obviously. I assume there's stomach cancer, mm-hmm. and are all these cancers food or environmentally related, do we think?
There's not many cancers that we know are environmentally related. We think that food is important in GI cancers, which is what I treat, because the food we eat sits right against the mucosa or the wall of many of these organs, so it makes sense that that's a risk factor. So a healthy diet is going to help you, but it wouldn't be the sole explanation. Certainly I have patients who eat very, very well who still get gastric cancer and small bowel cancer and so forth.
Yeah. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. While we're talking about colorectal cancers, generally, on the decline while young people have had more cases. Isn't this still a leading cause of death?
Mm-hmm. Yep, colon cancer is quite common. Most patients, thankfully, are diagnosed early enough where we can cure them. For those with stage four, most do die from the disease. Us in medical oncology are concerned about that we're going to see this trend reverse as people have less access to health care because colonoscopies are really expensive and most people can't afford them out of pocket. Most of this decrease that we've seen is directly related to colonoscopy uptake.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's the, it's just, how many people die from colon cancers? Do we know?
I don't know the number off the top of my head. I certainly could figure
it out on Google,
but it's second or third most common cancer, depending on if you lump the genders together or separate them.
Is it
breast and prostate being more common, lung being a more common cancer killer, but in terms of incidence, colon cancer is quite common.
Yeah.
It's the most common cancer I see.
The American Cancer Society estimates that 135,430 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer. About 50,260 people will die from the disease. So ask and ye shall receive. Thank you to my producer for finding that, looking that up. One in 22 men and one in 24 women will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer in their lifetime in 2017, according to the American Cancer Society. So, yeah, we still have some work to do.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And again, we touched on this earlier, but how can someone reduce his or her risk of being diagnosed with colorectal cancer?
I think getting screened, healthy living, aspirin a day, avoiding binge alcohol use.
Yeah, why does the aspirin help?
We think that aspirin interrupts a particular enzyme that's involved in making polyps. And it's a pretty good intervention in terms of low risk and has other potential health benefits, where we were able to make the recommendation that most people should be on it starting at 40. I take an aspirin a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's an easy intervention compared to what colon cancer treatment looks like.
I'll say, I'm curious because that's you hear, like my husband who has the beginning of some heart disease, he does an aspirin a day, mm-hmm. a baby aspirin a day,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure that that it's been is it regularly recommended just about for everybody or just only if you
well
think
I mean
of a family?
It should be right. It's in
yeah.
the guidelines, but not everybody follows the guidelines and. Primary care providers, there's so much that's put on them that it's probably not realistic to expect them to be able to hone in on everything. But it is a relatively recent recommendation and something that people can certainly bring up with their physician.
We welcome your questions about preventing and treating colorectal cancer, as it is a Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. And we have an open line for you. Now some calls are coming in. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Dr. Noelle Leconte. She's a medical oncologist at the UW-Carbone Cancer Center, an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. So, in an effort to increase awareness about screenings and prevention and treatments, we are talking with a medical oncologist from the UW-Madison Carbone Cancer Center to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So are you or someone else you know battling this disease? How has it affected you? Are you getting regular screenings? What's your reaction to this new study on colorectal cancer that says that more young people are getting it? It's on the rise in people under the age of 50, though our guest says the numbers are still fairly small for that younger age group. We have almost full lines now, but an open line for you at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dee in Amory is with us. Hi, Dee.
Hi. I wanted to call and give a positive spin to this whole mess. I had an amazing experience with my colonoscopy. My father died about 5 years ago from colon cancer, and he apparently had had it for years without knowing it. And so when I did go in for mine, I talked to my original provider, and I told her how frightened I was. And the surgeon came in and spoke to me. The stuff I drank wasn't all that bad. It wasn't all that bad, but there was a whole lot of it. I think it was banana, but it was not all that bad. And he came in and he had like a whiteboard or something. He showed me what was going to be done, and they gave me the medication. And he said, you're not going to remember anything until you come back here. And they took me in, and they said my name and said, turn over, and that's the last thing I remember. I had one polyp, and he said, see you in 5 years. And it was amazing, and I had all that fear that was completely unnecessary. And it was sort of like when you're having a baby and you sit and listen to labor and horror stories, and it was totally unnecessary. So people should not believe anything they hear about horror stories, because it's absolutely not true.
Except banana sounds a lot better than mine. But no, I'm just kidding, Dee. That I agree. The actual procedure was nothing at all.
It's way easier than getting colon cancer.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing about it is that the horror stories I heard about, you know, having your intestine and your bowel punctured and bleeding to death, and mm-hmm. I mean, it was really horrible. And so when I knew I had to have it, I just told my provider, I said, I'm terrified, and I'm sure that's not going to help. And so the surgeon came in and talked to me, and, I mean, it was amazing. I was, actually, when I left, I was disappointed, because I expected it was going to be really terrible, and it was not as bad at all.
I'm glad you had a great experience, and I'm glad you shared it with us, Dee.
Yeah. Good for you for being an advocate for yourself. That's great.
Yeah, it was really much, much easier than mm-hmm. what people think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. And boy, I want that banana stuff next time.
Right.
But all kidding aside, I mean, the actual procedure itself is you don't even, you know, you don't remember
yeah.
it. I think I did get woken up or I came out just near the end of the procedure. So actually, it was interesting to see what mm-hmm. was going on. And but there was no pain. I was fine afterwards, even though my husband did have a memory lapse. You know. And I, mm-hmm. we were told that because of the anesthetic that my doctor, who was kind of a joker, said, hey, bring him diamond shopping. He won't remember.
Right. Right.
And, but I don't remember having that. I felt like everything was fine
yeah.
right after that
yep.
was over.
Great.
Well, again, it's a very safe procedure. It doesn't take very long.
The prep takes a long time.
Yeah.
Right. We need to be realistic that for some people, it's not feasible with their life and their work schedule to take a day off before the test to prep, or the afternoon beforehand, get a driver the next day, you know, take the next day completely off work too, which is why it's wonderful that there's alternative options. But if you can get a colonoscopy, that's a good yeah. test to have.
Do you think that fear that Dee had is waning, or is there, I mean, are people still afraid to go get a colonoscopy?
Oh, I'm sure there's people. I see patients who've had symptoms for years and didn't want to get tested. I mean, yes, the fear exists.
How long can you, I mean, she said her father died, and Dee, I'm sorry for the loss of your father. I mean, how long can you go with a colon cancer that's spreading?
So we think that from the moment it becomes a polyp until it's a cancer is about 10 years. And then it's probably several years beyond that before it grows enough to spread to your organs.
Yeah. Dee, thank you very much. Charlie in Eau Claire is with us. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I'm a family physician, and I want to, Joy, give you kudos for having this program and the speaker. I think this is wonderful.
Well, thank you for calling. What is your issue?
In terms of just a tip on the colonoscopy prep, if you keep the prep material really, really chilled, it's a lot more palatable. If it gets up near room temperature, it's absolutely awful.
Yeah, that might be my problem.
Good
tip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, in terms of being a provider of healthcare, unfortunately, I see one or two cases a year of advanced stage colon cancer. And this is one of the saddest things that we ever have to deal with, because we know it would absolutely be preventable.
Yeah.
On the flip side, once or twice a year, we'll see just a wonderful outcome from screening. Early stage colon cancer will be diagnosed. Oftentimes, the surgery at early stage is really simple. A small portion of the colon, sometimes through a laparoscope, can be removed, and it's essentially life-saving.
Yep.
So I'm all for it, and encourage everybody to go ahead. I wouldn't recommend anything to anyone. I wouldn't do myself, and I've been through it twice. It's yep. not that tough.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Charlie. Yeah. If surgery is needed to remove a cancerous a polyp, what are the what's the usual procedure after that? Are there complications? Is everything? Does your colon function normally, or do you need one of those bags? You know,
it depends on where the tumor is what really drives whether you need a colostomy bag. For most patients with rectal cancer, you have to have at least a temporary ileostomy or colostomy. For colon cancers, we can sometimes reconnect you right away. Most of the time we can. We try to when we can. Every major surgery comes with risk, bleeding, infection. Colon cancer surgery is no different. But it's a pretty low-risk procedure when you look at other cancer surgeries, and we're getting better and better at it every year.
Let's go to another call. Let's go to John in Port Wing. Hi, John.
Yes, I want to throw some little hope. I had my colon removed in 1970. I was 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they removed the colon and the rectum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another thing give a hope, and nurses love me. Because I'm easy to take care if I go in a hospital. You regular people, you know, you do in bed. And here I got it in a bag, and so it's simple to take care. You know, it's not end of the world.
No, it's not the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. But it is an adjustment, and I don't want to minimize it, because it can affect patients' self-esteem and how they feel about themselves. It can affect their relation, you know, their marriage and so forth. So we don't want to be assuming it's just going to be totally fine, but you can survive it, and people thrive and live excellent lives.
Well, look at this. John, so I'm bad at math. How old are you now?
Yeah, look at the extent of my life. I was on a surgery, 50-50 survival. That was in 1970, and I am still alive, and I'm now 96.
Good for you.
There we go. Wow, that is wonderful. So, there's a survivor for you.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you so much, John, and thank you for calling. Let's go next to Jeff in Onalaska. Hi, Jeff.
Morning. I just wanted to add some levity here, too. I had my colonoscopy about nine years ago. I'm due for another one, but I stayed awake during the whole procedure. I didn't show any discomfort, so they didn't put me out. And I joked with the doctors about, after I got cleaned out, about swallowing a yellow marble and drawing a smiley face on it so they could see it on the way down.
But you didn't do that, right, Jeff?
No. Right. I got one coming up, though.
Okay, don't do it. Yeah. Don't do it.
Yeah, that would probably really give the doctor a fright, wouldn't it?
Yeah, indeed.
And plus, it's probably not a real safe thing to do.
Right.
Thank you, John, and good luck with the next one coming up. We have very little time, but Victoria in Exonia emails. Can you speak a little bit about hereditary colon cancer syndromes such as Lynch?
Yep. So Lynch syndrome is a pretty common syndrome where patients are at increased risk of certain cancers, colon and rectal being one of them, endometrial being the second most common, which is uterine cancer. At the UW, we screen all of our colon cancers for Lynch syndrome because we realized nationwide that we're underdiagnosing these people, but they do have very different screening recommendations, and so it is important if you have colon cancer to be assessed for Lynch, even if you have no family history.
All right. So in our final minute, maybe you can leave us with some final words of advice during a colorectal cancer awareness month.
Yeah, I think the one thing I want people to take away from this study is if you're bleeding, get checked out. Please get checked out. It's much easier to cure this diagnosis early. Yeah. Talk to your doctor about screening. Talk to your doctor about aspirin. Eat a healthy diet. Avoid heavy alcohol. Don't smoke, right? I wouldn't be an oncologist if I didn't say that. So I'm just really glad we're having this program because colon cancer patients are they're among the most wonderful patients that I have, and they really deserve some extra people being aware of their condition.
Thank you so much for being with
us.
Yeah. Dr. Noelle LaConte is a medical oncologist at UW-Madison's Carbone Cancer Center, an associate professor of medicine at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Thanks to Naeja Ellison and to Brianne Chasso for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network.